Hi, and welcome to another episode of We Used to Be Best Friends. I am your host, Sabrina. And on today's episode, we are tackling love bombing in friendships. Yes, love bombing does happen in friendships. It is not exclusive to just romantic relationships. It is a manipulation tactic, and it does happen in friendship dynamics as well. In this episode, we'll talk about what it is. We'll talk about the early signs and the warning signs and how to detect it. We'll also talk about why people manipulate and use love bombing. And we'll also talk about the cycle of love bombing and what it looks like. And as an added bonus, we'll also discuss the difference between a healthy friendship and building a healthy friendship versus somebody that is love bombing you, as well as how to respond to love bombing. With all that being said, I'm going to cue the music and I will see you on the other side. Welcome back. If you've ever experienced love bombing, whether it's in a romantic relationship or even in a friendship, you'll know what I will be saying and you'll probably relate to a lot of things that I'll be saying. However, if you've never experienced love bombing, whether it's in a romantic relationship or a friendship or just never in a friendship, these are good warning signs in this episode that will help you recognize it and identify it. And you don't know, maybe you did experience it with a friend and you just didn't know what it was at the time. So what does love bombing look like? I would define it in two ways. One, too much too soon, and two, everything's too good to be true. Now, I want to preface that there is a huge difference between someone that is love bombing you and excitement, somebody that is excited to get to know you and to be your friend. The difference between love bombing and someone that is genuinely excited is that the excitement, you can tell it is out of pure intentions. But love bombing, there is this underlying feeling and gut feeling that there is some sort of malice, some sort of coercion going on. When a friend is love bombing you, their goal is to create this illusion that there is a stronger bond or connection between the both of you. It's sort of coercing you into believing that you are closer friends than you actually are. The whole goal is to completely bypass the work, the building of a friendship. Because within a healthy friendship, when you first start to get to know somebody, that takes time and it takes effort and it takes getting to explain and expose yourself, be vulnerable with people little by little. That takes a long period of time until you really get to know the person and you really call them a friend. But with someone that is using love bombing, they want to completely bypass that. They don't want to put in the work. They don't want to show up and show you that they're consistent. They don't want their words matching their actions. They kind of want to skip through the get to know me part and I get to know you and just become immediately best friends or friends. That's why one of the biggest red flags for me when you start a friendship with someone you just know, is when you start that friendship and that person immediately labels you a best friend and you barely know each other. I'm talking about within the first few hours of getting to know you, suddenly we're best friends. It is telling me, you don't even know me. You don't even know my middle name. You don't know anything about me, my family, my hobbies, my likes, my desires. You have literally just known me in the past hour, 2 hours, and suddenly you are calling me best friends. That to me is a little bit too much too soon. It's on the exact same energy and wavelength in a romantic relationship where the guy tells you you are his soulmate or you guys are meant for each other or immediately throws, you're going to be my wife one day. Just in the first few hours of meeting you, getting to know you, those are clear signs of love bombing. Love bombing in a friendship also looks like mirroring. So someone is sort of trying to become a version of you, or they're trying to emulate everything that you do. So in the first few conversations, you might tell them your hobbies, your desires, your goals, and it could be something like really simple, like, oh, I enjoy playing tennis on the weekend. Now, love bombing has this manipulation that is underneath it all, is coercion, it is malice, it is bad intention underneath it all. Part of it is all about power and control. You might say something as innocently of, oh, I like to play tennis on the weekend. And it starts off as it being your thing. Like, this is your thing, your hobby. You like to play tennis on the weekends, right? Somebody that is love bombing you will suddenly say things like, oh my God, I love tennis. Tennis is my favorite sport. Tennis is like everything I've ever wanted. And they will slowly start to insert themselves into the plans that was usually your time, your goal, your thing. Love bombing and people that love bomb do not want you to be your own individual self. They kind of remove any autonomy that you have for yourself or anything that you want to do on your own for yourself, for your growth. They want to insert themselves in every crack and every avenue that makes you an individual person. And that's why love bombing is like that first stage, and why it's very manipulative, because it is literally the key stage that opens the door to you being controlled and eventually you being isolated from everything. Part of the whole manipulation process, especially when it comes to narcissism, is they do not want you to be your own person, your own self at the end of the day. So they'll slowly start to get to know you and get to know that the things that make you your own autonomous person, they will insert themselves into that and destroy it. The isolation part of the whole abusive narcissistic cycle isn't just isolating you from friends and family. It is also isolating you from yourself. Goals that you have for yourself, desires, things that you like to do, things that put a smile on your face, things that make you happy, they will slowly insert themselves in that and then try to ruin it for you. To my example of the tennis every weekend, that is your thing. That is your thing that makes you you, that helps you grow, that makes you happy. They will suddenly say things like, oh my God, I love tennis. Tennis is the greatest thing. We should play. We should play. We should hit. We should do tennis together. And they spin it in such a happy way to make you feel like, oh my God, this person wants to be part of my life. They like me so much that they want to be part of my life. When that might be what you think and what they're trying to coerce you into thinking, but that is not the end goal for somebody that is manipulative, abusive, toxic, and possibly narcissistic. The key thing here is that a lot of these narcissistic, toxic, abusive people, they mirror you. They pretend to like things that you do. But if you really, really dig deep, and try to figure out based on action if they're really interested in the same things that you're interested in, you'll notice that they never were. So it's like, let's say, for example, it's a tennis thing again. I do tennis on weekends. I love tennis. They'll tell me they love tennis. Tennis is their favorite sport. Oh my God, tennis, tennis, tennis. I've been obsessed with tennis for so many years. If you actually ask them questions about tennis, if I ask them, who's your favorite tennis player? Like, what's your favorite Grand Slam? Have you ever been to a tennis tournament? Where do you hit? What racket do you use? Like, what are your favorite types of tennis balls? You'll start to notice that they have no answer to that. You'll start to notice that they are stumped because they never actually were interested in that subject in the first place. They're just trying to coerce you to think that they are so that you believe that there is a connection and something similar to both of you, even though there is nothing there. It's practically a very intense way of lying. Most of the time when we're being love bombed, we never have the quick thought process of thinking logically. We tend to just enjoy the feeling of someone admiring us and someone like giving us so many compliments and the feeling of finally finding someone that is similar to us, that we don't even question them. We don't even think to ask questions. Because if we did in that moment, if we asked them questions, hey, who's your favorite tennis player? What's your favorite Grand Slam? You'll notice right then and there that that person's lying and that person doesn't actually find what you find interesting. They don't have the same passions as you. But unfortunately, love bombers tend to get away with that because they kind of throw in so much overwhelming emotion to make you feel good about yourself that you kind of automatically don't like trust them and just because they're making you feel great. They're throwing in all these compliments. They're like, oh my God, you're so interesting. You're so amazing. You're like, you're my best friend. We're going to be friends forever. Like they just make you feel great. They feel make you feel seen, heard, and wanted. And that's literally what every human being on this planet wants to feel. They want to be seen, heard, and wanted. And manipulative people, toxic people, people that use love bombing know that. So they use that to their advantage. So when they're throwing in all of this information, it is so overwhelming to the point where you don't even question them. You just automatically assume, oh my God, this person must really like me. This person like is so interested in me. I finally feel loved. I finally feel seen. I finally feel heard. That you don't want that to be crushed. You kind of just like go with the flow because you're like, I like this feeling. It's giving me a little bit of validation high and I like feeling admired and desired. So I'm not going to start questioning it because I don't want to question it because that will shatter the bubble of illusion. And because of that, that's why a lot of us end up falling for it because it's nice. When we get love bombed, it is like a very amazing feeling. But after the love bombing, that's where it starts to become very, very hurtful and abusive. So let me recap. In the first few minutes of getting to know somebody, maybe first few hours of hanging out with someone and they're love bombing you, they will mirror you. They will like and desire the same exact things that you like and desire that you have told them about so that they create this false idea that you have things in common, that there is a connection there. They will also throw incredible, beautiful words that will compliment you and make you feel amazing about yourself, including words like, you are my best friend. We are soulmates. We are soul ties. Like I've never met someone so amazing as you. It's just really like blowing smoke up your ass, really. But you don't notice that that is what it is because they are so good at manipulating the way that they say it that it sounds genuine when underneath it all, it is not. So that's the first easy part of the love bombing. The second part of the love bombing is when this person tries to create that power and control with you. You'll notice that everything that you do that you used to do on your own, by yourself, or things that like you enjoy spending time with yourself, solo dates, whatever it is, hobbies, goals, you'll notice that they will slowly start to trickle into those. Doesn't matter what it is, whatever you have told them that you like to do, it could be as simple as baking cupcakes on Sunday morning. They will suddenly invite themselves over to bake cupcakes with you and they'll make it sound like it is an incredible thing and it will make the connection even stronger. So while they insert themselves into every crack and avenue in your life, this is part of the isolation. I want you to think about it as a way of building, like, what is that word? I got it. It's building Stockholm syndrome. The isolation part of it kind of creates this Stockholm syndrome effect. Like someone that has been kidnapped by their kidnapper and is stuck with only their kidnapper ends up having this bond with them and like kind of falling in love with them and having like this connection with their kidnapper. Because they are isolated. It is a form of survival. It is the only person that is able to feed me and take care of me and make me feel good and keep me alive. I have to play nice. I have to survive this. So the whole dynamic of love bombing is part of it is isolating you, not just from your friends, but from yourself and your hobbies and the things that you like to do, because it creates that false bond. It creates that thing in your head where it's like, oh, this person needs to be in every part of my life because I need to now survive. And it's sort of like, I need to survive them in a way. You'll start to notice that this friend suddenly wants to hang out with you 24/7. Like, they will want to be in your presence for such a long time. You might even notice that you're hanging out with this person like 3-4 days in a row. And it just feels amazing. It's like overwhelming. It's a lot of fun. But you don't know that it's happening to you until it's a little too late. All of the regular things that you do on a daily basis, suddenly they've inserted themselves in that. If you like going to the gym on a daily basis, they will insert themselves and be like, oh, we have to go to the gym together. And they will show up to the gym with you and like work out with you. And this creates that illusion that this person is really your friend, that this person is really interested in you and your life and being part of that life, even though they're really not. They're just trying to insert themselves in the cracks of your life so that they can control you afterwards. You'll also start to notice in this stage of love bombing that anytime you tell this love bomber, hey, I have other plans. I have other plans with a different friend or, you know, anybody else, they will start to become upset. They will start to kind of make you feel bad for the fact that you have other plans. And they will start to say things like, but I already made plans for us that day. And they will say like some sort of plan that like you would really like to do to entice you, to coerce you, to get you to cancel plans with the person that you have originally had plans with. And this is all part of that isolation phase. Again, not only do they isolate you from yourself and your own hobbies and your goals by inserting themselves into it, they also get you to isolate yourself from your friends, cancel plans with your friends so that you can hang out with them more, cancel plans with family members, whoever it is, they'll try to get you alone with them and just them. So let's say that you are strong and you do not cancel plans with other friends and you stick to it. You're like, no, I can't hang out that day. I've really made a promise to my one friend. I'm going to hang out with that one friend. You will go and hang out with that one friend and you will notice that while you're hanging out with that one friend, the love bomber, the manipulative, toxic person knows that you're hanging out with that friend. They will insert themselves. It's not like they will show up or anything like that. But suddenly you'll receive a phone call or 100 text messages where there's an emergency, where something really bad is happening, where something like chaotic is happening, and suddenly it is all about them. Suddenly, instead of you hanging out with your friend and having a good time with your friend, suddenly it's, oh my God, there's an emergency. They're having a panic attack. They're like, there's something going on. They're in the hospital, or they're about to go to the hospital. They're saying that they're going to go to the hospital. Like something very insane, chaotic happens that it is like made to feel like an emergency. And most of the time, that's not even true. Most of the time, they're probably just sitting calmly in their bed by themselves. But this manipulative, toxic person is like, how dare you go hang out with other people when they're trying to control you and get you to only be with them. It is very insidious. It is very dark. It is very insane. They're literally probably sitting on their phone, calmly in bed, creating this fake emergency that they are having a full-blown like depressive episode, or they're having a panic attack, so that you end up being distracted from hanging out with that one person. And you start to cater to them. And because a lot of toxic, manipulative, narcissistic people tend to pick people that are very compassionate and empathetic, this tends to work very easily. Because anyone who has a heart is going to be like, oh my God, my friend is having a panic attack. My friend is like having a depressive episode. Like, I have to help them. This is an emergency. Like, I have to be there. I have to support them. Because that is what friends do. But that is what they know, that manipulative people and toxic people know that, and they use that to their advantage. So again, they're probably just sitting in bed, not really having any problem, but they want the attention to be on them. They want you to be focused on them. And this is why a lot of narcissistic people and toxic people tend to be surrounded with a lot of chaos. Every single other day, there's some problem, there's something chaotic happening in their life. Like, you feel like this person never seems to get a break. And most of the time, they create that for themselves. And most of the time, they also create it by lying and over-exaggerating. And a lot of narcissistic people like to pull at people's emotional strings by giving them a sob story and a pity story. That's why a lot of the love bombing also comes with talking about really traumatic events in the first few hours of getting to know somebody. And that should be seen as a red flag. I understand that trauma has happened to a lot of people, and you know, sometimes you feel safe to talk to somebody about it, but I don't think it is a healthy thing, or I don't think anyone that is in a healthy mindset that is healing is going to just meet someone in the first 2-3 hours is going to tell them about their trauma. This is a very difficult subject because some people genuinely feel comfortable enough to talk about their trauma to other people, but I feel like narcissistic people do that too. Narcissistic people do things like that too, so that they can make you feel like you're the only person that can help them. I mean, even in romantic relationships, if you've ever been love bombed by a guy, they will tell you about their ex and how crazy the ex was and how she was destructive and horrible, and that he's so happy that he doesn't have to deal with crazy anymore because now you're there. You're not crazy, right? You're the most amazing, beautiful person in the world. And I'm so happy that I don't have to deal with that crazy girl anymore. And I'm now hanging out with healthy, better people. They say things like this to get you to feel special, okay? And I think it is very important to differentiate between someone being genuinely telling you a story that shows themselves in a vulnerable light and somebody that is trying to use a story to get you to kind of feel tied to them. And I feel like the key difference here is when somebody genuinely tells you their trauma, they don't rope you in. Like, if you were to tell me your trauma, you'll just tell me the story and that's it. It is what it is. It is the story. The end of it. Somebody that is trying to use a pity story to coerce you will rope you in. So they will tell you a story like what I just said. Oh, my ex-girlfriend was crazy, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff happened. And then they'll rope you in by saying things like, I am so happy I don't have to deal with that anymore because you're amazing. You're the perfect girl. You're incredible. Like, I am so blessed. I am so happy. That's how they rope you in. So it's differentiating those two and recognizing how someone tells a story and how they're roping you in. And with a friend, they'll do that too. They'll do that too. They'll rope you in with whatever pity story that they have. And they'll sometimes say things like, you're the only person that I've talked to about this. Like, I don't know why, but I feel so safe with you. Like, you're the most incredible person. And I'm so happy that we're friends. I'm so happy that we met. Like, they'll add those compliments on top of that. They're trying to get that validation. It's just, it's such a nuanced situation topic because I've met people that are genuinely just saying what happened to them because they just want to say it and they want someone to listen to them. And then there are those that I have seen that use it to their advantage. And it's so insane because toxic people use vulnerable moments and use it to their advantage to coerce people into friendships and relationships. The best way for me to explain it, sometimes I like to use the example of Tim from Love is Blind. And I think that in that show, it showcases like the true difference between someone just being vulnerable and telling your story and someone that is using a pity story to rope you in and to make you feel like you're now forced to be a part of it. And within the pods, Tim ends up telling the sad story about his sister passing away. Now, if it was just truly vulnerable and he was just telling the story, he would have just told the story. and not really roped Alex into the picture. But he ended up roping Alex into the picture by sending her a bracelet, and that was his sister's bracelet, and then saying something like, "Now my parents have a daughter." So this creates this intimacy that is so extreme that Alex is in this place where she can't really say no. Somebody has given her a gesture that is so intense, so extreme, that has the underlying of such an intense, sad story that now she's part of it and there's no way out. And that's where the power and control dynamic comes in. And honestly, like if you sit there and you give the bracelet back or you say like, "This is too much," it makes you look like a jerk because like this person like bared their heart to you and gave you a bracelet and like said that you're going to be the daughter for his family. Like that is a lot of pressure for someone that you have not met yet. It is a lot. And I thought that that moment right there was pure coercion. Off topic, but I don't know, that season was just riddled with narcissistic people, like female narcissists too. Like male narcissists that were like overt and covert. It was insane how many narcissistic people there are in that season. What was it, like Washington, D.C.?
God.
But yeah, Tim was like, my alarm bells are screaming with that one, especially that one moment where he had that yellow shirt on and he said that his ex hated the shirt, so he bought it in spite of her. And that moment when I heard that, I was like, ooh. Run for the hills. Like it was just like my alarm bells ringing. I was like seeing red flags everywhere. And I was like, no. But I will talk way too much about Love is Blind and that season because they have so many examples of narcissism. Hannah from Love is Blind used the whole love bombing. If you think about it, like she said that Katie was her best friend and they've only known each other for like 3 weeks. That is love bombing. Like the way she wanted to make Katie feel like there was loyal, like there was this underlying loyalty, girl code loyalty towards Hannah by screaming out the word best friend. That was the whole plan. It was part of that manipulation, control, and power. So quite interesting season, really was. So let's move on to the third portion of the love bombing cycle within friends. So the first part to recap is somebody that is overly into you, really like mirrors you. Everything about you is incredible. They put you on a pedestal. They really do. They just shower you with so much love. The second part is isolation, where they still shower you with love, but they insert themselves into the little cracks of your life. Anything that makes you you, anything that makes you special, different, any goals, desires, even when it comes to friends, they try to get you to cancel plans with friends and hang out with them. It's like this whole situation. The third part of the love bombing cycle is withdrawal. And usually the withdrawal happens very quickly, very suddenly. It is when that person just absolutely disappears off the face of the earth. It started off where you guys are best friends, soulmates, like hang out 24/7, like phone calls, text messages, like so much communication just feels so overwhelming and it feels amazing. And then suddenly, crickets, absolutely nothing. Do they do that? It's part of the power and control dynamic because automatically, you will think to yourself, something must have happened. And most of the time, we tend to think to ourselves, I must have said something. I must have done something that bothered her. I must have like pissed them off. They're probably mad at me. They're probably like annoyed with me. Like, what did I do to deserve this punishment of complete silent treatment? Most likely, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything to deserve it. It is just part of this toxic, abusive manipulation cycle. A lot of toxic people use this, and a lot of narcissistic people use these cycles. And what you end up doing, because you're a normal human being that is not toxic and that doesn't use manipulation or coercion to get friendships or relationships. As a normal person, you'll automatically think to yourself, oh my God, I must have done something. They must be mad. So what do? You reach out, you text them, You call them. You try to make plans. You try to ask them what's going on. Why the sudden change? And in those moments is when this toxic, manipulative, narcissistic person feels their most absolute powerful. Powerful because they're being showered with so much attention. Like, can you imagine you're sitting there and you're getting all these text messages from somebody like basically begging you to answer. Now the power is in their hand and that's what they want. They want to be in control, in power of how you react, how you feel, how the relationship moves. And a lot of toxic, narcissistic people will brag about this to other friends. So if you've ever experienced a friend that talks about the fact that they have ghosted someone or like disappeared from their life without a reason, without any communication, just gone, and they're telling you, yeah, but they're reaching out to me, they're texting me, oh my God, how pathetic, like this person is begging for me to talk to them, like, oh my God. If you ever hear anyone talking like that about someone that they have discarded, you need to really pay attention to this person. Because that is part of a very, very, very strong manipulative tendency. Anyone that talks to you or like a friend of yours tells you, yes, how they're constantly texting me, whether it's a friend or a guy, whatever it is, they're constantly texting me. Oh my God, oh, how pathetic. Like, I can't believe they've been texting me all the time and I have not answered. I'm not answering. Oh my God, what a loser. Like, oh my God, shitty person. And that is not a good sign. That is a huge red flag for me. And if I ever saw a friend say that to me and boast about how the fact that they enjoy that someone is reaching out to them, trying to get answers, and they're enjoying that, and they're okay with the fact that that person is hurt with the lack of communication and the silent treatment, and they're getting some sort of high from it, some ego boost. No, thank you. That to me is not an okay friend. That is very dangerous behavior. So part of the withdrawal process, that's part of that cycle, is that no matter what you do, you're always wrong. So that's why I say, like, you didn't do anything wrong in that moment. And when they do reach back out to you, they'll give you a list of things that you did wrong. None of those things you did wrong. Okay. They're just giving you, they're making shit up at this point. They're going to pick something that is vulnerable to you, something that you know you're insecure about, and they will use that against you. Most of the time, it looks like you giving attention to other people. Like, for example, if I go back to you hanging out with that friend. So if that whole scenario happened, let's say you went and you hung out with that friend, and then this narcissistic, manipulative, toxic person ends up calling you and is like, oh my God, blah, 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 blah. I'm having panic. My chaos is happening. I need you. Emergency, all this stuff. If you do not drop what you do and help them, or even if you do drop what you do with your friend and go help them, no matter what decision you make, it is going to be wrong because that is the whole point of the withdrawal portion of it. I don't know how else to explain it. So during the withdrawal cycle, let's say you went over and you helped them. Suddenly, they'll ghost you, disappear, withdraw, ignore you. And when they come back, they'll say, yeah, you came over and you helped me, but you know what? It wasn't enough. Like, it wasn't enough. You didn't help me enough. You didn't support me enough. Even though what you did was enough. You literally dropped hanging out with a friend to go help your friend and be there and on the phone call, whatever. They will make up anything to make you feel bad, even though you did the right thing. Now, let's say, for example, you didn't pick up the phone, you set your boundary, and you continued to hang out with your friend, and you didn't answer their phone call for the emergency, all that stuff, which honestly, it's not really, it's horrible to say, but it's not really your business because you just met this person. Like, why are they suddenly roping you in? I don't know. But it's like part of that coercion portion. So let's say you put your phone away, you didn't answer, and you were like hanging out with your friend, and then maybe you answered later. They will use that against you and be like, oh, you're hanging out with other people. You care about other people more than you care about me. Literally, you probably just met this person maybe for a month. You don't even know this person. And suddenly it's like, how dare you hang out with other people and care about other people that you've known for years, and you didn't drop everything in that moment to come take care of me, even though you've probably known me less than 3 months. Like, do we understand the discrepancy here and the problem? Do we understand that? So they'll start to make you feel bad for the fact that you have other people in your life that you care about and that you're hanging out with other people. But within the withdrawal portion of it, the isolation, then giving you the silent treatment, disappearing, making you go crazy for months, thinking to yourself, you must have said something wrong. You must have done something wrong. You'll also find yourself sitting there like going over the conversations in your head over and over and over again, even to the point analyzing your body language, analyzing their body language, trying to figure out a clue of what you did. And maybe your brain becomes so tired of doing that, that it creates a false scenario, a false clue, just to give you an answer. Because part of the whole withdrawal silent treatment, it is a punishment. And it drives you crazy. It makes you feel tortured because you don't know the answer. You don't know the reason why. So sometimes you just create a reason for it. And what ends up happening is when they bring you back and it's part of the Hoover cycle, they bring you right back. That's when you are going to find yourself apologizing for things that you didn't do, for things that were not brought up. You will apologize for you just being you in your authentic self, and they will make you feel terrible about everything and anything that makes you you. Okay. And it starts very small. This is why it's a cycle, because it happens on multiple times over a few months, over years. They'll throw a problem. They'll say, oh, well, you weren't that supportive for me. Like, it wasn't enough. So then they'll hoover you back in, start the love bombing process all over again, then isolate you some more from your friends and make you feel like you need to be more supportive of them. They'll start to add problems. There's going to be a lot more chaos involved, a lot more drama. And then they'll give you the silent treatment again out of nowhere. And then you'll be like, oh my God, what happened now? What is going on again? Like, why do I have to go through this again? And then they come back and they throw another problem that you need to change and you need to fix. And this slowly chips away at you. Because the whole point, the whole problems that they bring up is what makes you you, what makes you individual, what makes you your own autonomous self. And that includes like the people in your life, that includes the friends that you have, that includes your hobbies and the things that you like to do. So it could be as simple as, remember in the beginning where, let's say you were a gym person and they're like, oh my God, I love the gym. Let's go to the gym. They insert themselves and suddenly they're at the gym with you a lot. Then later down the line, the problem is going to be you go to the gym too much. Like, oh my God, like you don't even spend enough time with me. You just go, you're always at the gym. You're always at the gym. Like, who are you talking to at the gym? Like, do you have other friends at the gym? Like, you don't hang out with me. We don't do the gym enough anymore. It's not like it used to be, but now you're at the gym too much. And suddenly the gym portion is now a problem. Everything that you start off telling them from the start that makes you, you, individual, like person, your authentic self, they will start to make all of that sound like it is horrible and it's a terrible thing and you should quit it. And you, if you fall for the manipulation, for that toxic person, you will slowly start to do that. And you'll slowly start to remove things from your life that make you happy, that make you you, that grow you, build you, and make you your own confident self. And everything ends up revolving around them. Their emotional state, you have to fix. You have to walk on eggshells because you have to make sure that they don't blow up and their emotional state doesn't go crazy. You have to make sure that all the plans that you make include them, even an invite, whatever. You have to let them know everything that you do. You're constantly like having to be at their beck and call. They will call you for hours and expect you to listen for hours, crying, boo-hooing, like you're their personal therapist. It is a lot and it is very overwhelming. And when they start getting bored and they've done everything that they can possibly do and they've chipped at you as much as they possibly can. At first, you know, you were on that pedestal and they like thought highly of you and they slowly started to like chip away at that wood of that pedestal until the pedestal broke and you fell off. And when you fall off that pedestal, they're bored. They're not interested anymore. You know, they've done what they did. They chipped away at you until you're not a person anymore. You know, you're a puppet to them. And that's boring. They want a challenge, you know? So they start to find other people and they start to bring those people in. And usually it's the same tactic, smear campaign, and the self-pity story. And this time, the self-pity story includes you. You're the crazy person. You're the terrible friend. And they're telling somebody else, like, oh my God, I can't believe I had to like deal with this person. They're just so horrible and blah, blah, blah. And the whole story is just concocted in a way to make you look like you're the abuser when you were never the abuser. You're the victim. And then from there, those people that they've told that to, usually if it's someone that's very manipulative, toxic, or narcissistic, it's very bold of them to pick mutual people, because that's how it's going to hurt you the most. It's going to sting the most. Because if it's someone random, it's not really going to bother you too much. But if it's a mutual friend or something that's close to you, and they insert themselves into that, and you know that mutual friend suddenly stops talking to you and stops like listening to you, doesn't even ask you your side of the story, just blindly listens to that person and their story, even though they don't think to themselves, maybe they're lying. Maybe it's all a lie. Maybe it's all coercion. No, that friend that you used to have that was like really close to you suddenly stops talking to you, suddenly believes the narcissistic, coercive, manipulative, toxic person, doesn't even ask you your side of the story, doesn't even ask you what happened. They just like automatically jump on the train and you lose a friend. So you not only have you gone through the whole abusive cycle, but now you're also dealing with a smear campaign, and you're also now losing a bunch of friends to a whole storyline that they have concocted because they're pathological liars. It is insanity. And when you're a victim and you try to tell people this without, like, with people that haven't really experienced a narcissist or hasn't really gone through that abuse cycle, people think you're crazy because of how you're talking, because you've identified patterns. Like, people will think like you're overreaching and you're reading too far into this, even though you're not. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely dead correct. But people that have not experienced someone that is that coercive, manipulative, toxic, or narcissistic, they won't believe you, because like in their head, there's no way someone can be that diabolical and that cruel and that insidious and that insane. But if you've experienced it, you know how diabolical, cruel, manipulative, and insane some people are. And they fly under the radar and hide and lie through their teeth and get away with a lot of stuff. And it is crazy going through this cycle. Absolutely insane. Okay, so let's end this episode more on a higher note by talking about what a healthy person and a person that is trying to build a healthy friendship looks like. You know, like the green flags, what to look out for. So, somebody that is trying to genuinely make a friend, genuinely build a healthy friendship, and is a healthy person themselves, a lot of it tends to be very slow and very boring. And if you're somebody that has been riddled in relationship after relationship, even like childhood, of narcissistic people and manipulative people, the boring part is just like something that is so out of this world for you, because usually you think that you need somebody that in the first moments of meeting them, it is like love at first sight or friendship at first sight, where it has to be like this intense emotion. Nope, a healthy friendship is not really like that. You have a little bit of emotion where you're like, this person's cool. All right. But it won't be that overwhelming emotion where you're just like, oh my God, we're going to be best friends forever. No, healthy friends actually get into meeting you, and it's very slow. Get to know you, ask you a bunch of questions about yourself. Like, you tell them a little bit about the things that you like to do. They'll listen to it, like, okay, interesting. They'll ask you a bunch of questions about the things that you like to do. Like, you know, if it's tennis, they'll ask you questions about tennis. Oh, okay, where do you like to play? Like, have you played for a long time? Like, who's your favorite tennis player? Like, they'll be more interested in asking you questions. And then when they tell about themselves, you'll notice that they'll tell you a lot of things and their hobbies that they like to do that are different to you. Healthy people don't need to have that similarity with somebody. If they do find that someone has a similar interest as them, they're cool about it. They're like, oh, that's awesome. But they're not like overly excited about it. It's just, you know, it's very like, oh, okay, that's cool that you like that, but I'm still taking my time to get to know you. It's not, oh my God, you like art. Oh my God. And it's just like overwhelming. No, A healthy friend is really trying to get to know you slowly to see if you're compatible. And it's one of those things where it's just very calm and it happens naturally. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like too much is happening too soon. It just happens at a natural pace. And then suddenly, 6 months down the line, you'll be hanging out with this person a lot and you'll suddenly think to yourself, oh my God, this person's suddenly in my life. We've been hanging out for 6 months. I didn't realize like it's been that long. It just feels very smooth and it's very peaceful and calm. They won't be calling you at all odds hours, telling you their pity story. They won't be expecting you to be their therapist. Like maybe 6 months down the line when you guys have really established a friendship and they feel a little bit more confident and comfortable with you, they'll start to be a little bit more vulnerable. But the vulnerability portions start to slowly come. It does not happen in the first few month or hours that you meet someone. It's kind of like, you know, they're trying to get to know you to see if you've earned that spot in their life where they can feel comfortable enough to open up and to be vulnerable and to slowly say little things here and there, like of their life, of their childhood and stuff like that. But it's never overwhelming. It's just very calm. It's very calm, cool. It's very collected. And everything happens at the right time. And it feels like even when they tell you something that is vulnerable, it doesn't feel like, oh my God, now I have to say something that is vulnerable. No, it's just they tell you, they don't expect anything from you. They don't expect you to say anything back or to meet them with another vulnerable story. But someone that is manipulative, they do that in the first few seconds. I'm exaggerating, but the first few moments of you guys becoming friends, like within like a week, maybe 2 weeks, they do that. And it's not because they genuinely want to tell you the story. It's because they also want you to feel like you need to tell them your trauma. And most of the time you end up falling for that. You tell them your trauma. And then later down the line, they use that as their own ammunition. It's really messed up. But a healthy friend, it's very slow and it takes time to become friends. And they're not going to label you a best friend immediately. They might not even label you a friend, you know, until they've really gotten to know you. Like at first, they'll just be like, oh, yeah, I know her. She's cool. We hang out. But it's not like, oh my God, she's my friend. No, that stuff is earned. That stuff takes time and it really needs to like, you know, healthy people have standards and they don't just allocate roles to people that they think might not be able to fulfill the job duties. Basically, like if I'm going to talk about it in like a corporate way, but it's kind of like love bombing is barely interviewing you, not even knowing if you have the skills and putting you as VP of their company. And then you're like overwhelmed because you never asked to be VP. You just wanted to be a secretary. I'm just creating this in my head. You applied for secretary, but they put you as a VP. And now you feel forced to do VP roles, even though you never like consented to it. And then when you're obviously underqualified for it and you start to mess up because you've never been in a VP role, that's when the narcissist starts chipping away at you and making you feel horrible for the fact that you've never been qualified in the first place and you never consented to that role. You're just like forced into it. And you feel bad. It's so messed up. And then when you can't fulfill the role and the duties, they just make your life a living hell. When you never asked for that, you just wanted to be a secretary. You wanted to have like a small little role. That's what you were looking for. But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy making too. And when it comes to healthy friends, it's always slow, calm, cool, collected. There's never really chaos around them. They're kind of doing their own thing. And they let you do your own thing and they'll come support you whenever they can. And it's never like forced or overwhelming. That's just like the best way for me to describe it. I think green flags and friends is really genuinely wanted to get to know you by asking you questions. Like they're genuinely asking you questions about the things that you want to do or that you're interested in. And they want to learn more about you. At the same time, they let you have that for yourself. Like if you're a gym girly and they're not, I'll ask you about the gym. Okay, so do you have like specific sets do you do? Do you have like a routine? Like, what do you do at the gym? Like, they'll be genuinely curious, but they'll never insert themselves. Like, if they're genuinely not a gym person, they'll be like, oh, that's cool. Like, I'm happy for you. You keep doing those sets. I'm going to be rotting in bed at home because that's what I like to do. But they'll never insert themselves. They'll never like try to take that away from you or make it theirs or make it like together. It's always like, oh, I'm interested in what you're doing, but I'm not going to insert myself into it. And that's what healthy relationships are. They let you be autonomous to yourself and have your own things. Like, a healthy friend will never make you feel bad for hanging out with someone else. They know that you have your own life and you have people that you have known for years before them. So, you know, you have plans with other friends. They'll be like, oh, okay, cool. Let me know when you're free and we'll hang out. It's, you know, they want to be a part of your life, but they don't force it. And if you don't want them to be a part of your life, they're not going to make you feel bad for it. They're going to understand. They're going to be like, okay, we're not compatible. I get it. I'll go find someone else. But it's just very level-headed and it's normal. Healthy friends will not give you the silent treatment. They will communicate. Like, I heard this quote, I think on one of the podcasts, it was like, a true friend will stab you in the face because they will come up to you and they will tell you the harsh truth right to your face. They're not going to be afraid. They're going to tell you like, hey, this is my boundary. This is how I feel. This is what I need to communicate. This is the way you behaved that time. That's how it made me feel. Like, they will be very upfront, because they want to nip the problem in the butt as quickly as possible to continue the friendship. Like, they don't want to sit on it for too long. Like, they really don't. And friends that go behind your back and talk to other people, but never bring it up to you, and then treat you with the silent treatment, withdraw, and like give you the cold shoulder. Toxic. Sorry. A lot of us have done it in our like past. I've done it too. I've been toxic at one point, but you can heal from it. You can grow out of it, or you can continue to do that and blame everybody else, but you will continue to be toxic. It is what it is. Or you can grow to be healthy and learn how to change your behavior. And healthy people don't deal with that. Like, honestly, for me, the moment I see somebody giving me the cold shoulder and they're not bringing up the shit, if they have a problem with me and they're not bringing it up and they're giving me the silent treatment, but then I hear from Katie and she's like, oh, I think Ashley's mad at you. Okay, Ashley didn't bring it up to me. Sounds like an Ashley problem. But if Ashley's going around telling everybody else about the problem but never brings it up to me, that sounds like a very toxic friend and I'm not interested in that. And healthy people don't want to waste their time with people that create unnecessary drama like that and bring other people into the mix and then tell other people that there's a problem and, oh my God, there's gossip and drama. No, healthy people see that, they recognize that, and they remove themselves very quickly. Poof, gone, bye. Not dealing with that shit. And if they ever come back and ask what's going on, healthy people will tell you straight to your face, be like, hey, you did this. You didn't bring it up to me. You went to Kelly. You told Kelly. Then you went to Amber and you told Amber. And then you went to Rachel and you told Rachel. And after 6 months of hearing it from everybody else and you did not tell me, you never brought it up. And when I asked you if everything's okay, you tell me it's fine. And then you ignore me and give me the silent treatment and treat me badly and give me the cold shoulder. I don't deserve to be treated that way. I'm out. Thank you. Like, respectfully, bye. Healthy people don't deal with that anymore. Because they've tolerated it from friends in the past, and it is just too much stress. And life is way too stressful with job, kids, family, the husband, the boyfriend, the family. It's just too stressful to also add a toxic friend on top of that, that creates issues out of nowhere and cannot communicate their shit. Like, honestly. And I'll probably do a podcast talking more about conflict. I'll touch on it a little bit. I want to be very, very clear with conflict. People that are healthy don't see conflict as a problem. They see it as a way to fix something. That's why they're good at conflict resolution. That's why they're good at communication. Because when there's a problem, they don't see that as like, oh my God, it's going to be horrible. They see that as an opportunity to discuss it with somebody and to come up with a problem to fix it. Okay. It is very like business-like to healthy people where it's like, okay, we have this thing that we need to tackle and talk about. Let's talk about it and let's figure out a solution to fix it and let's move on with our lives. Okay. It's like, I want you to think about it in a corporate HR way. If there's an issue at work and you have to bring it up to a client, you're not going to give the client the cold shoulder. You have to bring it up to the client and talk about the issue that is happening so that you can come up with another plan to either bypass the issue or to fix the problem, whatever it is. But can you imagine? You see that there's an issue, you don't bring it up to the client, and then you're like pretending that there's no problem. What in the world? Your business is going to crumble really fast, really, really fast. But yeah, healthy people don't see conflict as a problem. Toxic people see conflict as an issue. Like anyone that argues and screams at the top of their lungs are not good at confrontation and are not good at conflict resolution. They're actually very bad. They're horrible. They have zero communication skills because to them, it's an argument is about being right. And it's not about having a discussion with someone to fix a problem.
Nope.
It's about it is my way or the highway mentality. So anyone that I have brought up an issue to and starts arguing with me and telling me that what I'm saying is wrong or telling me that my feelings are not valid or that, you know, me calling them out on their behavior is like they never did that, any of that. And then if they're screaming, yelling at me, that tells me you're terrible at communicating. You have zero communication skills. You have equally zero conflict resolution skills. And this is not a friendship where we can work things out. This is a friendship where there's going to be issues and these issues are going to pile up. And one day you're going to be a ticking time bomb and that is not going to be fun. And sometimes it is just seeing the reality of people and where they're at and their level of skill in how to adult. And if they don't have that level of skill of how to adult and you're looking for a healthy friendship, you need to find people that have that level of skill. Okay. Like, I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. It's like you being a tennis player and you're at a very, I'm sorry if I bring up tennis a lot, but I'm a tennis player. But if you're a tennis player and you're an advanced player, like you need to find people that are at your level and can hit the same way and play the same way for it to be fun and dynamic. Can you hit with someone that is a absolute beginner? Yeah, you can. But that beginner is going to start to become frustrated and angry and annoyed and irritated. And it's just not going to be a great dynamic. And you're going to be annoyed and irritated because you're not having fun and you're trying to be supportive and you're trying to help them out. You know that they're a beginner, but they're just like wailing and screaming because they can't even handle the fact that they can't do it and they don't have the skill for it. So I want you to think about it in that way. Okay. This is all about adult skills at the end of the day. And the whole love bombing manipulation process is the fact that it's somebody that does not want to learn those skills and doesn't want to do it the hard way. So instead of, you know, working on it and learning it, they're just going to coerce you into thinking that they have those skills when they don't. And then one day you're going to get on the tennis court thinking that they have the skills to play tennis and you're going to notice they can't do anything. And when you call them out on that, you're a terrible person. It's all your fault. All right, my friends, I hope you learned enough or a lot on this podcast episode. I can't wait to talk to you guys very soon in the next episode. Please leave some comments. Please rate this episode or my podcast. Get it up there for people to hear, especially if they need to hear it. Send it to friends that need to hear it. Support as much as you can. You can find me on TikTok at The Third Side. I'm also on Instagram at @thethirdside_. I do also have a book for friendship breakups. It's called We Used to Be Best Friends. It's on Amazon. Go get it. And I love you guys so much. And I'm sending you so much love and healing on this journey. You got this. It is all about building those skills and we can build it together. Love you guys. We will talk soon. Bye. Every time.